And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. What a fantastic crowd we have out there tonight in the Ideas Room already. And this is a special report. I wanted to do something, and this is Thursday's not our usual slot, but I wanted to do something about this because there's just no time to waste on the emergency powers that are being invoked by a number of dictatorial governments very close to home now, our neighbors up in Canada with the Trudeau government, of course, Jacinda down there in New Zealand, and just a host of others, and coming, of course, to a theater near you with Stepford Biden. So this special report is all about the context of invoking these emergency powers, and this is so crucial because, you know, I feel like it's one thing, and we're going to get into the whole Canadian mess and how they're treating these lawful protesters in a very illegal fashion. But what's even more important, I think, is the context of this emergency powers. And this is how they ran the whole Corona op in the first place. Of course, it's how they ran 9/11 and a series of other emergency ops. It goes all the way back, of course, to the Enabling Act with Hitler's Germany in 1933. And we're going to see all the threads and the similarities here. We've got Carly from the Hawthorne Dimension out there. It's great to see you in the Ideas Room, running the show along with Kat Goida. And thanks, and on short notice, Groovy Bean also. It's great to have you out there. And just a terrific group with us tonight. What we're going to do, basically, is I'm going to give that context of the continuity of government program and how now it's going global, and how the WEF now finds itself right in the middle of that, promoting this. And I know a lot of people like to say, well, the WEF, you know, it's basically just a bunch of figureheads. But you're going to find some of the key people are centrally involved right there in the Davos crowd. It's just undeniable. And so the Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates groups, these are the gateways, the kind of tentacles to those larger figures. So yes, are there figures operating in the background behind them whose names we'll never know? Absolutely. But we might get a handle on getting their names. So we're going to go about an hour and a half on this tonight. And I know for those of you who've been waiting for Fitz Part 2, that's coming out actually tomorrow as well. So we have a whole bunch of great stuff coming up for you. But the emergency act that Trudeau enacted against his own people is just completely illegal and represents government occupation of civilian population, which is completely, you know, undemocratic and fascist, straight up. So now, interestingly enough, his comrades there in the media, they're a little nervous about this one too. And remember, this all came about when we had these truckers who objected to these vaccine mandates, and the mandates became very strenuous and really just completely unlawful and not backed by any, no force of law behind them. They're just edicts, you know, being swung out by these kind of regional governors. And on the top level there in the Canadian government, it's a very strange situation because Trudeau's government actually is one of the least popular governments ever put in place there in Canada. And so we're looking at kind of an interesting situation where I think they got something like 31% of the vote, but they're still allowed to rule. And with the way that that system works, it's very unusual because he only needed to get 25,000 votes to win. I don't understand that. So we're going to have to go a little deep. Around here, we need 75, 76 million to lose, right? One of the interesting things, though, I think that we see in that lineage of Trudeau and the strangeness about his own lineage, this is somebody that has been picked out by the World Economic Forum and also the Soros types. And, you know, he's been very open about embracing that. So this is not even a conspiracy theory. But this group now that's operating out of Davos is selectively putting in these leaders in different countries, New Zealand with Jacinda Ardern. Absolutely just a WEF puppet. And Trudeau, no question about it. And in America, of course, the CIA taking the place of a lot of that role. So people like Buttigieg and all these types who are just starting to come up the political ladder. You know, they're all trained by the Central Intelligence Agency, as Obama was. So, you know, I think in a way we were able to look at that and see the political corruption and just hope things would change over time. Now, the way that they're working things, and Canada's a real canary in the coal mine for this, the seizing of assets under the phony domestic terrorism title. This is what we've been seeing that they've gone for a push for in America as well through the Biden administration and the domestic terrorism bill and the Attorney General Garland saying, you know, basically parents who were showing up and saying that they didn't agree with mandates were terrorists. So we're right there. We're all on the razor's edge with this. And so, you know, it's kind of like, let's just face the moment now. And these people, one of three things will happen with them. It seems to me that part of their group, just like when they went into the second version of the Iraq War, is embarrassing another part of their inside group. So the Trudeau forces, say, with Schwab and the WEF behind them, are embarrassing some other core function. I want to point this out in the media because it's extraordinary that elements of like the New York Times and the Washington Post, which are pure establishment, aren't going along with this. For example, in the Washington Post, Canada turns authoritarian to shut down the Freedom Convoy. So they understand the nature of the stakes. And if they get exposed, remember, that's it. The people in the establishment, if they get exposed for the things that have been happening over the past couple of years and beyond, of course, they're going to jail. And so they don't want to be openly exposed. They want to do it in segments. And they feel now that this man is becoming a liability. And that's why The Economist, the ultimate in New World Order journalism, they're saying this guy, you know, he's actually making things worse. So they don't agree with it because fundamentally what it's exposing is that, you know, you have these working class people who've been doing the job of delivering goods across the entire continent. And, so fundamentally what would happen when you have a big protest like that, it would be like a labor situation where you would negotiate with the people. But in this case, what they've been doing is they've been acting like they're, you know, back there behind the walls of their castle. And this is quite extraordinary. What I actually feel their strategy is that if they can just keep this up and just have enough of that thin, thin minority with them. Right now, you know, Stepford Biden, for example, in America, 28% approval rating, right? I mean, you can't govern that way, but you can govern through emergency powers. That's the thing. Even if you have a 0% approval, because if you have the position and you call an emergency, you get all the power back. And this is the same thing with our friend Trudeau, who was losing drastically in the, public opinion war on this. And his only real hope is to go in there and pretend that these are Nazis that are there. You know, they're all a bunch of white supremacists and nobody's buying it because they've been there. It's been one of the most peaceful protests and successful protests. Now, I also want to mention that the protest and the convoy organization on one level was organic, but there's another level, of course, we have to consider which crept in to promote it and get it to a point and maybe get those people in trouble. And also to test out this mechanism that we're going to talk about that the government is using to freeze all the finances for the people who are involved in these protests. This is very, very serious indeed. So I want to take this opportunity to tell you to go to the darkjournalist.com website and sign up for our free newsletter to keep us in touch because we've been facing a lot of different types of censorship going on. And hopefully, you know, we've been able to navigate it with your help. And but I want to point it out as something where if you're a member of the free newsletter, it gives us that kind of ability to talk with each other with, you know, not relying on the social media networks as much as I, you know, love engaging on the network. but anyway, the newsletter is free. It comes out once a week and just there's no marketing or anything in there. It just lets you know the incredible interviews and X series episodes that we have coming up for you, including the one that's coming up next week. Okay. And, oh, I also want to mention that I'm not going to be taking questions because we don't have Olivia tonight. I didn't make it into the studio, but I am going to, you know, if you save those questions for a week, then we're going to have a real hoedown on the next time with the questions. And I'll grab some here at the end as well. And I've learned the magic technology of highlighting the questions now. It's the greatest thing in the world. again, it's great to have so many of you out there. Let's go to continuity of government. Okay, continuity of government was originally devised by the Truman administration, but really got picked up by the Eisenhower administration. The idea was if the Russians bombed us, you know, with nuclear weapons, that we'd have an underground government that was capable of, one, withstanding it, and two, had a totally separate leadership order, so they couldn't decapitate the top. We had a whole secondary government. What happened with this was it grew under secrecy and layers of secrecy. And a lot of the secrecy, of course, was justified because we had a bona fide Cold War enemy. And but of course, the military industrial complex liked that enemy and promoted it. And at every turn really got us into deeper and deeper trouble instead of trying to negotiate. And ultimately, what happened was this body of continuity of government developed networks and financing and secret sources of financing. And so the COG group started to grow as its own unchecked base of power. And the Central Intelligence Agency and other covert action types were very much involved. And it got out of the oversight of the normal Senate intelligence committees because they said, hey, this is secret. You know, it's too secret for you guys. If you knew it, you know, you'd be a potential liability. What if you got kidnapped, et cetera? So they were able to build in these layers of secrecy, just like the original charter of the CIA is something that we've never seen. But I can guarantee you it does not give the Central Intelligence Agency the ability to have, for example, its own Air Force, which it does. or to run, you know, its own covert operations. It's just not in that charter at all. They're supposed to gather information to feed to the president. And he makes the decisions. So by the time you get to Kennedy's era, this has been so, you know, the lines have been so blurred that the president, the outgoing president Eisenhower, warns that there's this group that's just taking over. And he says, beware the military industrial complex. When Kennedy takes over, he's shocked. He can't believe that the Central Intelligence Agency is basically running the government and running all of our overseas operations, and that they're doing things like deposing presidents and throwing elections and everything else. So he gets determined to rein this whole function in. Well, in the meantime, the group that's grown up with the continuity of government over those 15 years or so have built massive underground bunkers. They have control centers, and they have this thing called the Doomsday Network. Now, the Doomsday Network is on record. It's not something that's just a conspiracy theory. It's just that network that operates when nothing else is operational. In fact, the internet comes out of the Doomsday Network. And the idea being, again, if we got hit by a nuke, these guys would be able to take care and compensate for the situation. Now, interestingly enough, during Kennedy's assassination, one of his Secret Service agents named Winston Lawson, who laid out the course of the Dallas trip, he uses this emergency communications network. Now, this had not been done during presidential trips before, and it's never well explained what he was doing. He also lied in his testimony in relation to the trip generally. So now this gets into Professor Scott's work, of course, and he's someone who coined the term the deep state, and the deep events that he references from the JFK assassination all the way up to 9/11 and the financial coup d'etat of 2008 certainly falls in that category, along with all the nonsense that we've been seeing since 2020. But you can roll back through all those various incidents and you're going to find people in Watergate, people in Iran-Contra are all operatives of this secret COG structure. So in Professor Scott's work, he really tries to point this out. Hey, all the people who built this thing, they're building it for some political reason. And, you know, they get sort of unlimited, secret, unchecked power. This is the thing that needs to be brought out. So the only time that COG was openly used was during the 9/11 attacks. But the architects of continuity of government were Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. What they did during the 1980s was they rebuilt a version of COG, and instead of compensating for the idea and making it implicit that in order to organize COG and to activate it, you needed a nuclear attack, they changed that to any emergency. So all emergencies were, you know, anything that they considered an emergency suddenly, you know, if El Salvador invades the United States, then we can call it, you know. Of course, El Salvador is in the news with all the Bitcoin stuff going on. But this is very interesting to me because that change allowed them to get this version of continuity of government. And this is what I think is so crucial, because we're now in the era of this continuity of government. What Trudeau did is the first. It is the first. I know they mentioned that his dad invoked this other Emergencies Act. That one had nothing to do with the level and the scale of this one. And that was in relation to a hostage situation or something. This is completely new, has never been invoked, and it gives them the ability under, you know, this wasn't even invoked during 9/11. I mean, come on. And he's taking the trucker controversy and using it as an excuse to exercise this thing. And what he wants to do, he was losing in this whole battle. He was going down hard, and the truckers had embarrassed him, and he was going to have to be forced to rescind the mandates. And he could not do that and then go back triumphantly to his masters at Davos. So the idea is he's organizing the emergency powers, and he thinks he can go back to the Davos crowd and say, look, this is how emergency powers worked out. We were able to block these funds. We were able to freeze these funds. We were able to call this group terrorists. We were able to implement more of these mandates. He wants to go back and have that story instead of, I lost to the trucker convoy. They beat us back. And now what are you going to do with me? Are you going to depose me? But the problem is the entire establishment's not on board with his response. And we're going to see similar things going on, just like Jacinda now down there in New Zealand is facing off against all these protests, and it's not happening for her. She's not responding to it well. I want to go back to an interesting story. And if you go back into the history of protests, it's quite interesting because even some of the most hardcore times in history where there were protests, if you think about it, like during the Vietnam era and President Nixon, the president, you know, understood their position. They had to sort of have some back and forth with the people who were protesting them, just like the labor unions and how they came to be. That's how we got Jimmy Hoffa and all those things. And there were physical battles, you know, to make this stuff happen, because the difference between capital and labor, you know, the Rockefellers would have everyone working for $2 an hour, slaving away in a coal mine, and they didn't want unions and things like that. And the people had to organize against those things, and it caused violence, and they called the cops, and those things just happened. And that's how we have that whole history of the labor union movement in America. But the sensibility on the top levels, even going back to the Nixon era. Now, Nixon thought of as unpopular around the Vietnam issue gigantically. Those were the hugest protests probably in American history. But, you know, there's the famous moment where during these major protests going on in 1970 that Nixon is like, you know, I have to go out and talk to these people. And he does. And, you know, we have those protesters meeting with Nixon and the policy that they thought was completely unfair and driven by the military industrial complex. And they were right. But, you know, Nixon understood my position as a leader. I have to go meet and talk to these people, and I need to understand my constituents. And you can't even imagine the level of hatred that those protesters had for Nixon. But he actually went out without even much of a secret service detail, and everybody was freaked out, actually. And he went down and he talked to them for hours. And, you know, this is the, you know, like them or not, I mean, this is what leaders do. When you run into major opposition like that, you don't just blow them off, especially when it's hardworking constituents. So this idea that they can just call the shots from their little castle and nobody is going to bother them, and if you do, I'm going to send in, you know, my contingents to clean up the streets. Those are thug tactics that go back to Hitler and the Enabling Act. And so invoking the Emergencies Act against the so-called freedom convoy. I think the trucker convoy is looking for freedom, in fact, so it's an apt name. But I, you know, I don't even think of the convoy as particularly political. Isn't that interesting? I think that they're just looking to live their life and to do the things that they want to do without, you know, it's enough to block people from restaurants and theaters and all this other stuff because they don't agree with you and your medical tactics. But to actually take their livelihoods away and say you can't enjoy a livelihood, that's basically an act of war. So then when they rebel against it to say, I'm going to invoke emergencies action against you, that's dictatorial level. And it's an international crisis. Just like Australia throwing people into COVID camps is an international crisis. I don't understand, you know, what is the UN for? Where's the UN on this? Not that I trust the UN, but, you know, just as the body itself, the idea would be, well, this would be the body, the international body to go in and handle this problem where the government is suppressing the civilian population. You know, if it happened in a country that we didn't like, if it was Russia and this was going on, we'd take it to the UN and the UN would give them a million sanctions. But since it's Canada and this is all part of the World Economic Foundation flow and the DNC is in sync with them, America's very, very quiet about this, which is absurd. But even Trudeau can't hang on to those media supporters. Even the New York Times is like, this has gone too far and he should have had a negotiation thing in place. They don't want to see it because it'll turn and backfire on them and their plans because they want to do that here. That's what the whole act, the Domestic Terrorism Act that Stepford Biden put together with Merrick Garland and his other spooks. You know, this is the thing that they want to do in America and they don't want their cover blown by, you know, this raging freak dictator Trudeau going in and sending in thugs to remove the trucker convoy. Now, they have the thuggery that they're performing. They're trying to do it through the Minister of Finance, the Deputy Prime Minister Freeland. And they're trying to put a female spin on some of this, which I find remarkable because they're also with Jacinda trying to pull this off. You know, well, since it's a woman doing all this dictatorial stuff, it's okay. It won't come off as harsh. But unfortunately, that doesn't fly. So these tactics are very interesting that we're sitting in the middle of. But we have to understand the invocation of the Emergency Powers Act is the most undemocratic thing that you can do, especially in the case where, you know, you haven't been nuked, for example. There's no cause to invoke that act unless, you know, you have an extreme earthquake or you've been nuked. Basically, that's it. You know, the idea of turning it on peaceful protesters is absurd. And, you know, I do feel that this is not going to end well for Trudeau and that the people around him have taken, you know, kind of a policy of burning their bridges that, you know, there's no way that they're going back on this when, in fact, the mandates should never have been there in the first place. And that's what we're learning throughout America as well. And this is all part of a much larger consolidation and global dictatorship plan, as we've been discussing. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. We're live here on Thursday, this February 17th. And, you know, this special emergency broadcast is in response to all the emergency action that's being taken by very dictatorial leaders who want to take all of these powers to the next level. And, you know, when they were doing it in America last year, we had the Gavin Newsom types and Gretchen Whitmer, and they were saying, I can call martial law if I want to. No, governor, you can't. You don't have the ability to do that. And also your edicts have no force of law behind them because in America, the government, you know, it's the legislature that makes the laws. And the governor signs off on them, but the governor can't say, here's the law and you're, I don't need the legislature. It doesn't work that way. But these guys tried that out, and a lot of them got into trouble doing it. You know, Whitmer completely went off the radar. Of course, Newsom had a recall action, which he squeaked by with the help of the California Pelosi mafia. And, you know, and Cuomo had to step down over a sex scandal. Well, I'll tell you, that's nothing, because this guy was guilty of large-scale genocide in nursing homes. So, you know, it's just, it's a weird way that these things shake out. But I'll tell you that the establishment, people like the Central Intelligence Agency, World Economic Forum, they don't care who they use. And if that person burns out, you know, and becomes expired in terms of the type of use that they can get out of them, forget it. You know, it's not important to them. They'll find somebody else, you know. And this is the nature of the thing when you get yourself involved in that very sleazy underworld of deep state action, which we see a lot of these folks are. All right. It's a fantastic group out there tonight. Somebody mentioned Olivia. No, we don't have the lovely Olivia tonight, but we will come back with Olivia next week and be taking your questions. I'll try to handle a couple anyway later tonight. And we have Kat Goida out there along with Carly from Dimensions running the Ideas Room. It's great to have so many of you here. And okay, so a little bit of that crossover now that we're getting some continuity of government idea. And I'm going to come back with the leader of NORTHCOM, who's the combatant commander of America, Van Herk, and his relation to all this, because he's going to be a very central figure. But before I go there, I want to get into some of these meltdowns that are going on as Ardern and Trudeau are realizing, oh my God, we're kind of the glorified anointed ones from the World Economic Forum, and we're in trouble. And, you know, we've reached too far and our populations have turned against us. How'd you like to have those Maori doing their dance against you? I mean, that's pretty heavy duty energetically, like that action just spins off. But this is some of the latest. Jacinda Ardern loses it at unacceptable anti-vaxxers stopping kids getting to school. So anti-vaxxer was the term that they chose for anybody who disagreed with them, even people who believed in some vaccines and not others. They just wanted something to, you know, grind people into the ground with. In fact, these people were just, you know, a better title for these people would be like well-informed or, dissidents, which is what they've turned them into because they disagree with the policy of the government. If a government doesn't make room for dissidents and people who don't agree with its policies, it's a dictatorship. Very simple. Very, very simple. New Zealand Prime Minister absolutely lost it at unacceptable anti-vaxxers currently protesting outside her nation's parliament. And Jacinda, you know, she has a really big problem because she was put in there and New Zealand practically had no cases to start with in any case, but she brought in some of the heaviest lockdown measures. And, you know, basically her population has had it. But, you know, when they're coming in from the outside, and she's just completely influenced by Boris Johnson in the UK, she doesn't have, you know, the background to handle it when things don't go her way. So now they're dangling her out there. They wanted her as this, you know, woman leader. And unfortunately, she's coming here to Harvard to give the commencement address in May. Isn't that interesting? If she's still prime minister by then, maybe we'll get a little protest group going for that, because she's the last person in the world. We don't want people from our new students becoming fascists like Jacinda. But another one that is interesting is this Freeland. And I want to go into Freeland. Maybe I'll jump into Freeland now. Freeland, Chrystia Freeland, is both the deputy prime minister and the minister of finance in Canada. And she's the one who they just put out there as the face because our friend Trudeau is going down so hard in the polls. They're starting to put her up there to make these edicts. And so her latest one is banks have started to freeze accounts linked to the protests, which is completely illegal. If you have a protest, you can't go freezing people's bank accounts. And what they're using to do that is this Emergencies Act, because the Emergencies Act says, you know, if there's a terrorist network out there, that you can freeze their bank account because, you know, they might do some harm. And, you know, it's targeted at kind of like Al-Qaeda terrorists. Well, guess what, Canadians? Now you're the Al-Qaeda terrorist. Guess what, Americans? Under Stepford Biden, you are Al-Qaeda. And so they're turning those very tools that they were, you know, developed during 9/11 into the same tools to turn against the domestic population. Well, these are the same ones that they used against Muslims in 2001. She's a weird one, Chrystia Freeland, because there's a lot of strange things in her family's past related to Nazis as well as the Ukraine, and including her grandfather running a newspaper dedicated to anti-Semitic Nazi tropes. But what's even odder is, you know, she was part of the McLaughlin group. She was a journalist here for the Washington Post, the CIA Washington Post. And I remember her regularly. As a matter of fact, so many people from the McLaughlin group are showing up in strange guises, like Tom Rogan, who took over the McLaughlin group after McLaughlin died, who was an expat Brit who was living in America. He suddenly became Mr. UFO File and connecting the UFO threat stuff up. And this guy became like UFO Central. And I was like, he's completely like, political person, a researcher, how he got so lumped in so fast and so dramatically with the UFO File is very interesting. But he used to do all the shows with Freelon. So Freelon's presence, you know, in the media and then suddenly showing up in these two majorly powerful positions. Maybe somebody in Canada can tell me, you know, in Canadian politics, is it usual for someone to be both Minister of Finance and a Deputy Prime Minister, like to hold those two positions? That's really a lot of authority that they're putting on her. She's somebody who, if you dig in a little bit, for example, she has a 25-year ongoing professional relationship with George Soros. And so he's, you know, he's somebody who's really kind of sponsored her out in the world. And she is his biographer as well. So this is somebody very deep in there. And Trudeau, of course, always ready to praise Soros and his, you know, completely drummed up, propagandized revolutions, Orange Revolution and everything else. And he tried the Purple Revolution with Clinton during the Trump presidency. Remember that one? Suddenly Hillary Clinton was walking around in purple suits everywhere. This is Soros' Purple Revolution. It just didn't quite take off. But it is interesting because she's someone now that they're putting out there as the face of this. And she's saying, hey, you know, there was this website that donated to the truckers. And guess what? What we're going to do is we're going to take all those names that were hacked. And that this was a weird thing also, that these news agencies started to publicize the names of the people, GiveSendGo, which was kind of a Christian version of GoFundMe, because originally, remember, the truckers had raised $10 million through GoFundMe, which is pretty incredible. And all that money was frozen, which is also illegal. And, you know, the GoFundMe people just were like, hey, we don't agree with the politics. We're going to freeze it. I mean, that tells you where they're coming from. Why bother using a service like that? I know I never will. So there was another version of it, and they didn't have the infrastructure really to handle those kind of incoming attacks. And so they got all those major hacking attacks, and somebody got that list of the donators and put it right out. Now, what should happen ordinarily is this Merrick Garland, who hangs around, you know, trying to figure out ways to go after anyone who doesn't agree with the Biden administration as a domestic terrorist. This guy doesn't do anything when this hacker comes out and says, hey, I hacked all this stuff. And instead, you know, news outlets like Vice have been sharing those names, which is incredibly disgraceful for a news organization to do. Anyone who's involved in any kind of journalism would never do anything like that, because you're just, you know, taking stolen material, one, and from people who are just innocently giving to a cause, you know. And if some of your political enemies were in there doing it, that still doesn't justify it. It's illegal. So, you know, we have incredible double standards going on to such a point. What I want to point out, like the whole crux of this episode for me, is I've been watching emergency powers be the rule of the day, but I had studied emergency powers for years because Professor Peter Dale Scott's work is fundamentally about the capability of the continuity of government emergency network and how it's been involved in all these deep events throughout our history. So by the time they started hitting with the COVID emergency, and this is an emergency, we need to block the churches and we need to block you from going out, and we need to like make sure you don't go into the bank except virtually, and you need to stay at home and teach your child through Zoom and all this kind of stuff. And they were doing it under this guise where they could get the people to go along with it. And you know, so many of the facts are debatable, but nonetheless, we know the, you know, they've been wrong about, you know, Fauci and that group has been so wrong over and over again, proven wrong, even by their own media that loves them, that we know that we're at a kind of a juxtaposition here between what is genuinely going on in relation to any kind of medical emergency and the types of things that they've done to enrich the pharmaceutical companies. Two totally different types of things. You know, I love it sometimes when people say, well, you know, the science, you have to follow the science. Well, they only follow the science to a point, you know, where it serves them. And then they depart and make up their own rules, as we've seen them contradict themselves. It reminds me very much of a story I remember when there was a company that was trying to prove that the Corexit, that the Roundup that Monsanto made was actually killing these bee colonies. And they made an incredible study, it was a scientific study, and it said, look, this product Roundup destroys the bee colonies because the bees get it, they transmit it to each other and they die. So Monsanto, that's one kind of science, right? They do a real report and it gets out there. So the press was really unhappy about this because at the time Monsanto was the major, you know, they were greasing everybody's palm. And what happened was Monsanto didn't like it so much that they bought the company that made the research against them. And then they produced a new report that said, you know what? Roundup does not do this, in fact. In fact, it actually promotes the health of bees. So there's two different types of science there. There's paid for science, which is the latter example. And then there's the former example where they did the real research and it turned out, guess what? Roundup was killing the bees. So when we say science, we have to qualify it. What exactly are you talking about? You know, I mean, there's lots of ways to perceive this. So we need to get into real discussions about this. The other thing that they've done is they've laid on such a heavy, and I can speak from personal experience on this, heavy, heavy censorship on any real conversation around this. But now, as we know, all the things that were being talked about last year, on the independent side, the alternative media side, these are the things that turn out to be true now and that they admit themselves without, you know, kind of castigating themselves and saying like, oh, we were wrong. They just say, oh, there's an update. Guess what? You know, such and such doesn't actually work. Thanks. See ya. you know, so this is the weird kind of reality that way we find ourselves in currently. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. We're here on Continuity of Government. An Emergency Powers Act coming to you, to your state, to your country, to your world, the entire world going global with the Global Continuity of Government program. Continuity of Government originally dreamed up to create a massive underground government in America to survive a nuclear attack. That was the covert government. Well, somewhere along the line, that covert government usurped the overt public government, and that's why we're in this strange situation where what they want to do is have everything run by emergency edict. That's where they're heading because they don't have the popularity to manage these situations otherwise. And that's a crucial piece for us to get into. COG, Continuity of Government, got an incredible leap in the 80s, as we pointed out through the work of Donald Rumsfeld, originally the youngest defense secretary and then one of the second oldest. You know, it's kind of interesting his career there because under Ford, defense secretary, 76, right? Bush W. Bush, 2001, and in the 80s, he's the CEO of what? A pharmaceutical company. And they call him in, even though he's a private citizen. And they say, we want you to set up the COG stuff. And he does. And so he had a role in it. That shows you those deep state tentacles. And the more that we can get into those, you know, we track back heavily on this program for all the deep events that have changed the course of history from 9/11 to the JFK assassination and the misunderstanding around these things, which I think is crucial. And so here's our opportunity to kind of set the record straight and see what this was all set up for. And as we can see, the emergency edicts giving somebody with only a 31% plurality to run his country there in Canada, really, you know, that's not the kind of popular support you need for these programs. And so you're seeing a mass revolt against him. And in this case, it was the trucker convoy that was doing it. And I do think there was some hijinks around the promotion of this thing. I think there was a group in the background there looking for more of a showdown than they got. But nonetheless, so many of the people involved in those convoys, I think, bringing forward an honest grievance, which is, we don't want to put up with your mandates, you know, and that's a totally legitimate position. The position of the government, as stated by Trudeau, was these people hold unacceptable views. I mean, that's basically like Hitler. How can you have an unacceptable view? You can think anything you want in a free country. I don't know what country he wants it to be, but, you know, it's not China yet. It's certainly, you know, it could fall if he gets his way and is able to consolidate that Ottawa situation. But we'll see how this is all going to turn out. I want to remind you, with all the censorship, as I mentioned, to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter, which is a free newsletter. It keeps us in touch through these crucial periods of time. We have some very exciting announcements coming up for you this spring, including interviews, documentaries, and events. So make sure you're on that list. And a lot of people telling me that you're not getting notifications through YouTube and stuff. You know, all I can say is if they unsubscribe, you resubscribe, hit the bell, do all those wonderful things. And, you know, it seems to me that the newsletter is the safer, sounder way. And it's free, so you have nothing to lose. Okay. Let's go back over some of the histories of this, and then we'll dive into Van Herk. Great to see everyone out there, of course, tonight as well. And Kat Goida's ruling the roost out there in the chat. And I saw Groovy out there as well. It's great to see you both. Roosevelt News, it's great to see you too. This clash that we're seeing now, actually, it has its roots back here. And this is the fundamental issue in government now, which is this part was never resolved. Kennedy attempted to resolve it, which was to put the Central Intelligence Agency back in the box. That's the leader of the Central Intelligence Agency, who'd already been in there for a decade, and basically running the government. You know, they report times where Eisenhower had a stroke, for example, in 1956, and basically Dulles, as CIA director, was kind of running the world, you know, and Nixon was the VP, and a very young VP, actually got in at 39. So he was somebody who, you know, wanted to get along. And my feeling on this is that the Central Intelligence Agency was just like, hey, you know, we've grown and we can run this thing ourselves. So when Kennedy comes in, they have a mission, which is they want to take over Cuba, and he's not on board. He knows a lot about Cuba, and there's a lot of secrets in relation to Cuba and our work on the hot zone, et cetera. But even on the traditional political record, just looking at it from a basic standpoint, they wanted to set up this operation, which was a leftover from the Eisenhower administration, and basically get Kennedy to go along with it, thinking, oh, you know, I'm over my head, or it's already gone too far. I'm going to have to call in forces to invade Cuba. And that's the whole Bay of Pigs incident, which happens very, very early now in Kennedy's administration. But this setup and its defeat, when Kennedy doesn't go along with it and he figures out what they're up to, and he fires the sacred cow of Alan Dulles and his deputy, Charles Cabell. Now, there are a lot of interesting strains there, including the fact that Cabell's brother, it will be the mayor of Dallas and will help set up the motorcade route when the president's assassinated. But the crux of this is that there was a fundamental power struggle between the executive branch and the Central Intelligence Agency. The only other one that we've seen recently between the CIA and the executive branch was during the Trump administration. And a lot of this had to do with the fact that Trump didn't want to play by the traditional rules. Whether you like Trump or not, doesn't matter. Trump had a very aggressive interaction with the Central Intelligence Agency. And they worked, including central figures in the CIA, before he got in to get him out. Now, part of the reports that have come out, and we've been waiting for the Durham report for years, but they have finally started to make the case through the Durham report of how the Clinton administration, the Clinton campaign manipulated the Trump campaign and was able to spy on them and try to create this false Russian narrative. This whole thing was a complete whitewash. And the interesting thing about it is the media pushed it hard. The Central Intelligence Agency controls the media, and they were pushing it hard. But it all fell apart, and they had impeachment after impeachment, and it just didn't work. So the idea is, if you don't go along with this system, you'll either get so much opposition, you won't be able, either we'll throw you in jail, you and your family, or you'll have so much opposition that you just won't be able to do your job. And so during all those years of the Trump administration, we had investigation, but they never proved anything. And he never lost any of the impeachments. So, you know, this is an interesting point of view for us to keep in mind as we go along here, because the Central Intelligence Agency has such a role in all this. So if we understand when Kennedy removed Dulles back then, that's the first move that's significant against the CIA. And the CIA responds with the first revolt against the White House, because when Dulles is out, he still controls the CIA, but Kennedy has fired him, which is humiliating, one. But two, it slows down all their plans, you know, the kind of world domination plans that we're seeing the global dictators on now. So we have to keep that snapshot in mind, then bring it up to date through the continuity of government players. So if there's an emergency declared by President Stepford Biden, the leader of our country will not be Biden anymore. It will be General Van Herk. And Van Herk is the NORTHCOM commander. The NORTHCOM commander, NORTHCOM is weird anyway. It's not even supposed to be there. NORTHCOM was created by George W. Bush in 2002. And this is a construct. It's a control construct because it has no legitimate purpose. The idea is, you know, we had SOUTHCOM, which kept an eye on South America, and it made sense in terms of our military interests. NORTHCOM is very unusual because the targets of NORTHCOM are the U.S. population. And so whenever we have people rise to the top of NORTHCOM, they automatically become the combatant commander, which means when COG gets called, they rule everything. They're like king. So shouldn't we even know who these people are a little bit? I mean, what about General Van Herk? Well, I've put some things out there in relation to his predecessor, of course, and it was very interesting. There was a big dust up with Newsweek about it because I knew they were using him as a source for their stories. But this thing about continuity of government is very interesting because what happens is if you go back in time, it wasn't even allowed. It was so secret. It wasn't even allowed to happen in Senate session. So if somebody mentioned it, you know, as Oliver North did in 1987, everybody freaked out and said, you can't say that. You can't even mention it. But the reason that he mentioned it was because, they were using the Doomsday Network during the sales of missiles to Iran, which they diverted the funds to the Contras so they could take over Central America and Nicaragua. But they were using that same network that would be used in the case of a nuclear attack. And so he was trying to kind of defend his position and be like, well, you know, this is just something that is set up and lawful, but everyone in that house freaked out and just said, you know, you can't say anything else. And in fact, his lawyer, who is a civilian, stood up and invoked the Secrecy Act and said, my client can't speak anymore about continuity of government. So this is really strange territory. But as we get in a little bit later, what starts to happen is right around the time of the coronavirus, suddenly everybody wants to talk about continuity of government, which was a real surprise to me because I'd been studying it and in kind of obscurity, like, you know, Professor Scott's books are known among very informed groups who study politics. But it was hardly the stuff of, you know, New York Times headlines or something like that. And so he had taken this whole body of work to figure out what COG was all about. And suddenly they were just talking about it left and right. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, JSOC, they're the ones who would take over DC, you know. And they were very enthusiastic about it when Trump was in there, and they didn't know how they were going to get him out. So, you know, we have to kind of keep this in mind when we're looking at these people and the situation that we're in, because what they want to do, just like they're showing, they're taking the mask off and saying, you know, this is who we are. We're fascists. We want to control this country. We have 31%. That's all we need to call an emergency. That gives us all the power. Now, in fact, the conservative group and the leader of the conservative group in Canada, Candace Bergen, there's a name for you, right? That's very well known. But Candace will not go along with it. And she has real, you know, she's taking a very dignified stance against this, which is remarkable. And I think that they're all freaking out over there as a result of this. A little more. Let's see. Oh, yes. This one. This is part of that when they suddenly wanted to talk about it. Exclusive. Inside the military's top secret plans if coronavirus cripples the government. So they were hoping, hey, you know what? Trump will get COVID, we'll call continuity of government. And then we can have this Van Herk take over, and that way, you know, we can have time to rig this election, which they thought they were going to lose initially. So suddenly they were very interested in talking about this, which was remarkable to me as somebody who'd been watching the subject for, I don't know, two decades, something like that. So just like the UFO file aspect, just like when the CIA now can't help themselves but to talk about the UFO file, and now they're sending out people who are like, hey, I was a director, you know, I was in CIA for 25 years, and guess what? I'm also a contactee. Isn't that great? So that means the Central Intelligence Agency, now they get to say, well, we've been dealing with the UFO thing, and we have our own contactees, so we don't need the whole public side. And by the way, that UAP ASRO office that's getting called by Gillibrand and that can set up a whole UFO threat thing, now we're going to have all the CIA people interfacing with her on that. And, you know, they had a scientific group set up here at Harvard with Avi Loeb. And originally it was, you know, they were going to study the scientific side of it, the AI side of the UFO phenomena and all this. And suddenly everyone from the CIA started showing up. This is the way it works. The CIA has to control anything in relation to something they can call an emergency on later. The UFO threat idea and the way they would like to roll that out has the same type of emergency powers, because they say, oh, it's completely unknown. We're the only ones who can help you with this. You know, we're the ones who can save you. You know, and you don't know, this is a big enemy. They just need an enemy. And the alien threat idea, completely bogus, in my opinion. The UFO file is real, but the threat aspect is completely unreal. Especially, you know, the idea that we would get the truth from them anyway is absurd. So, but these are the types of things I think that we need to keep in mind, because the COG aspect relates to an emergency. The thing that Trudeau called, you know, is an emergency what? Because the truckers have all stationed themselves in a protest? That's not an emergency, you know? I mean, it's your own people pushing and saying you need to address our concerns. That's what you do in a protest. That's what democracies do. So, you know, if it's some issue where, you know, like the CCP behind the BLM stuff, then the media loves it. And they're like, we're in the middle of a cultural revolution. But if it's these guys, you know, and they're saying, hey, we don't want to take your mandates and we still want to just do our job, and then they are, forget it, they're white supremacists, right? They're, they have to be called every name in the book. This is the disconnect of the mentality, and they're just being so obvious about it. But it also is trying to tempt one side of the population against another side of the population. They're trying very hard to figure out how they can do this. And it's worked in some capacities, but it's also failed in the big picture. And I think Trudeau is about to become the poster boy for its most severe failure. So this is really kind of where we're at on this now. All right, what else have we got here? One of the things before I leave Van Herk and COG and Northcom, keep this in mind. I'm going to read some statements from Freeland and Trudeau in a minute here, but keep this in mind that in September 14th, 2001, we got this whole piece about emergency powers, and we live under the Emergency Act, September 11th emergencies, which were put into law September 14th. Every year, the president, whether it's Obama, whether it's Biden, Stepford Biden, whether it was Trump or W. Bush, they all sign on to that emergency powers. And if they don't, then the NDAA can never get through because it's attached. So that's kind of a handy way to keep those emergency powers going in there. And either side is so smitten with the idea of using the emergency powers that they will never call the other one out. So every year, the Democrats and the Republicans, they're against each other on everything. They call each other every name in the book. But when the NDAA comes up with that $800 billion boondoggle for the military that has the September 11th Emergency Act written into it, they all sign along. Everybody, there's no discord. I think there was one person who objected, but it was 93-0 was the vote in the Senate. Deal with that. So you can see a lot of those things about divisions are often manufactured. When it comes down to it, they want that military gravy money and they want the emergency powers ability. The emergency powers are so dangerous, and whenever they are called, they should be called out. Let's think about the Hitler Enabling Act. So the Enabling Act from 1933, the passing, which had its anniversary, it will have its anniversary on March 23rd. Okay, so if we go back, that's 67, it's the 89th anniversary of this thing. This is what put Hitler in control. This piece of legislation is one of two enacted in the wake of the fire that devastated the Reichstag building in Berlin. So they blamed the communist, even though this is the ultimate false flag. And then they said, oh, things are so out of control. We have to take all the rights away. We have to control everything. But what it effectively did was their version of Congress, it neutered their ability to make any laws. It was just they ran everything by emergency edict. Because what the Nazis figured out was they couldn't get a majority. They had run Hitler for president, and he didn't win. There was a deal struck where they put him in as chancellor. But the president died. And then as part of this whole piece of Hitler consolidating power, starting with the Enabling Act, he just combined the offices of president and chancellor and was like, hey, I'm the full ruler now. And which is why I thought it was interesting when we were looking at Freeland's background that she was both the deputy prime minister and the finance minister. It's interesting. Whenever you have two roles going on like that, you know, it's like, hey, I'm the Secretary of State and the Attorney General. somebody's consolidating power there. So Hitler, in this case, and I want to, because this is really kind of the root of our modern era in terms of emergency powers, Hitler could now make any decisions he wanted as long as they didn't interfere with the structures of governance itself. The Reichstag, with many civil rights having been suspended by the decree issued, sounds familiar, hello Justin Trudeau, in the immediate aftermath of the fire, the Nazi regime could now freely round up and imprison its enemies in camps such as Dachau, some of which were already under construction. They had already figured this out. These same people who are calling for emergency powers, they plan to either force their enemies, political enemies, into capitulation, or what do you hear about? They are talking about, oh, we have to put people who don't agree with us in these camps, and they have some kind of medical justification, right? Specifically in these places that are an international crisis point, like Australia, they're doing it. There was a bill for one in Tennessee in the United States of America, believe it or not. Canada, forget it. They have them replete. They're hoping to have a huge construction boondoggle as a result of this. Now, as a result of this, laws restricting the employment of Jews and other groups could quickly be enacted, taking whole sectors by surprise, such as those concerning educational facilities and newspapers. Well, when you say here's a mandate and you can't work, you're doing the same thing. So really, who's behind this? Who behind these various coups? I mean, they are very fascist in nature. I know people have said the CCP is involved, and I don't doubt it. But the nature of the consolidation of power is very Nazi. And, you know, it's, and it likes to call out people as Nazis, which I find interesting because, you know, you doth protest too much, Chrystia Freeland. This was interesting. Trudeau warns of severe consequences for anti-vaccine mandate protesters who don't stand down. Notice the language, standing down. In other words, not who, you know, you can peacefully protest, but don't disrupt, you know, business life in Ottawa. No, it's if you don't stand down. That is, if you don't stop opposing me, you're in for it. The next piece is, here's the quote from Trudeau. Everything is on the table because this unlawful activity has to end. Everything is on the table? So are you going to nuke them? What do you mean? How exactly is everything on the table? Since when you get a protest, is everything on the table? You know, so the language here is very unusual. This guy is worried that the whole thing is going to unravel and everything that he was supposed to be set up for. So now he's embarrassing his leaders because he didn't have the skills to try to negotiate this thing down. And so we're looking at somebody who's at the end of a very thin rope and they're trying to send Chrystia out to kind of soften his image. But unfortunately, she's using Nazi language and her grandfather was a Nazi. So it doesn't really work too well. Candace Bergen, conservatives will not be supporting Emergencies Act. Now, the other Canada opposition leader from the NDP, this Jagmeet Singh, says they will be reluctantly supporting the Emergency Act, but warned against overreach. So that guy gets no credit at all. But Bergen stood up, and I think that this is crucial. Bergen is someone to watch in Canada. She's behind the freedom push on this, and she knows that Trudeau has overstepped his bounds, and she will not support the Emergency Act because she realizes it's fundamentally the Nazification of Canada, which is happening. So let's flash back again, how the Enabling Act paved the way for Nazi dictatorship. It's always what? It's not by winning the natural democratically elected vote. It is the emergency powers. Because if you're just the president or just the chancellor, you can't do those things. Just like if you're just the prime minister, you kind of can't do what you need to do to squash your enemies. You need the emergency. You got to have that emergency going. If you don't have the emergency powers, your chances are suddenly dwindling drastically. So the entire global takeover also relies on an emergency. Well, what is it that we got? We got global medical emergency, right? And the origin of where that emergency arose, as it was dramatically exaggerated, of course, but nonetheless, for the emergency that did exist, where did it originate? It's still unknown. and we know more and more that the idea of it originating in a lab in China, in Wuhan, looks like the best bet right now. 2 years ago, that would get you thrown off of social media. I'm sure it still can. But now the mainstream media can talk about it. So this, now it's 89 years, as I said, on March 23rd, since the Enabling Act paved the way for the Nazis to take control of Germany. And the writer of that article that I was reading, Michael Stuckberry for The Independent, so he looked back on how the road to dictatorship can come about slowly but surely. And this is what they did. They put in all of the various factors for someone like Trudeau to then get in a position where he could press the button and say, it's an emergency and all our enemies are going down. And by the way, he also said, maybe we just shouldn't make room for these people. So we shouldn't tolerate these people. I mean, that is Nazi jargon. So what they're trying to do, they're trying to create an atmosphere where, you know, they're morally superior. And as a result, you know, you are morally superior for believing with them and that you can take this group over here and you can, you know, disagree with them. And because you disagree with them, you have the right then for them to be eliminated. That way we make big camps and throw them in. And if they don't go along with the program, we'll wipe them out financially and everything else. This is what they're bragging about. banks have started to freeze accounts linked to the protests, Freeland says. You know, who are these people? They have been largely trained by the Soros crowd, by the World Economic Forum crowd, Schwab, Gates, and all the rest. So the agenda is out there like an 800-pound gorilla. We can see it. But the ability for us to call it out, and I think it goes beyond just one country, but America certainly should. Unfortunately, America is fighting these very same forces who are attempting a coup from within. And part of the coup, it's the coup is not complete in America, but part of the coup is active. And so much of it runs through the DNC. I'm sure that sounds political, but you cannot deny the facts on the ground. You know, I don't think this is a Republican or Democrat issue, but the you're seeing over and over again, the Republicans, remember, we live under the Constitution, and you can't do that. You know, you can't take rights away. You cannot do these things. Now, whether they do that because of they feel it in their hearts or because they're just pleasing their constituents, nonetheless, over and over again, like in Florida with DeSantis, you see him saying, you're not going to lay those mandates. You're not going to have masks on kids. You're not going to have this kind of thing. This is the crucial thing. That's where the heart of that kind of fight is. And we need to be in that fight. And it needs to be a peaceful fight, but it needs to represent enormous, and I mean serious, serious opposition while time is on our side. Of course, in my conversation last week with Catherine Austin Fitz, she said we had 1, maybe 2 years, but if they introduce the passport system and the digital ID and these types of things, that's it. And I've heard it also from other people I've spoken with, like Bobby Kennedy Jr. He says if that aspect of it goes in, then we won't be living in a free country. And already we know that we're not, but it would be really a tremendous step into the abyss. So these are the types of things where we have the time and the pushback on this is on. We have to make sure the pushback does not get manipulated so that they're able to call it a domestic terrorist type incident. And for us to keep in mind that it's the Emergencies Act, it is the emergency powers, it's the continuity of government powers. This gives you the consolidation you need when you can't get it politically. And that's being left out a lot when people are criticizing Trudeau. They need to bring that around when we're talking about America, that we're looking at global continuity of government, that all of these places have very small support, in fact, for their leaders, like Jacinda, like Trudeau, like Biden, who we know got in very, 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 under very, very shady circumstances. So what we're looking at fundamentally here is they don't have it. They do not have the popular support to do this. They need the emergency support. And if they don't have the emergency support, they can't pull it off. So therefore, the temptation to do the emergency. But if you do the emergency in a clumsy fashion, as Trudeau is doing, you freeze all these bank accounts and you punish the truckers and then you send the police in, then you run the risk of exposing the global version of this. And they're not going to be happy with that. So that's why you're seeing some of these articles in some of these establishment newspapers against him. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. Whew, this is really, you know, we're deep into it now. We have leaders from the World Economic Forum and puppets of Soros and Schwab and Gates out there consolidating power and, you know, being celebrated and being like, isn't it great that she's a woman and she did this? Look, there need to be more women in politics. There need to be more women in journalism. There need to be more women in alternative journalism. It's absolutely true. But, you know, look at Hillary Clinton. Being a woman isn't the actual qualification. It is being a woman who has good sense and ethics and a lot of heart. And it's very interesting because, of course, what we have going on with the Durham report right now is showing the extent to which Hillary Clinton's campaign tried with the CIA to set up a private citizen at the time, Donald Trump, because he looked like a formidable competitor. And they tried and they didn't get away with it. But those things are coming back. And so today, Hillary Clinton, who they're trying to do, believe it or not, like a comeback tour on, which is kind of amazing because she's the poster child for political criminal. You know, she's out there and she's freaking out, making speeches saying, I'm getting framed by right-wing media and all the rest. because I think this is already messing up her weird plans to come in and, you know, roll over Stepford Biden and freaky Kamala Harris come 2024. And I mean, that's a long way from now. So even speculating is pushing it. But we know Stepford Biden is probably not even going to make it through this term. I mean, his faculties are clearly impaired. I mean, how can you get anywhere as a country without acknowledging that? And that's why we're under all these weird systems. And I know that they're trying to throw off for the public, because their numbers have sunk so low, they're trying to throw off all the mandates and things as quick as they can. But, you know, after living through 2 years of it, we know that they embrace these things, and they have Fauci out there still pushing the old line, like, hey, you know, booster number 19. I mean, it's the level of criminality. Some of the people are going to jail. I mean, I think it's really obvious that they are, but we're in a very tenuous situation, because as that starts to develop, then we're looking at the emergency situation on their side. They're thinking, aha, it's the emergency COG powers that'll get me back in power. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist special report now on emergency powers. You know, we've stressed the emergency powers, and I started the year off with an episode called Welcome to the Blackout, which is something I think we need to watch. One of the things they may try to pull in all of the hanky-panky with Russia and Ukraine is they may try to pull, and I've heard, you know, people like Marco Rubio talking about this, saying, oh, you know, we're under cyber war, we're under cyber attack, and that means the grid goes down, it means your computer won't work, and that means there's an emergency, and it's all Russia's fault. So they could cut off communications in that way. They could also try to mess up the grid in that way, which would put us all in a situation of living, again, you know, under emergency circumstances. And we've seen hints of this, just like they've said, oh, the climate thing is a crisis. We need lockdowns for climate change. You know, if someone tries to put you in your house again for anything, you know where to tell them where to go. But I think that this is crucial, and we need to really link the emergency actions being taken by governments like Trudeau's government, and I'm sure Ardern is going to follow up, with continuity of government and the whole system and the deep state activity related to it, because those two things need to be connected. Because very often I hear it discussed and people are like, why are they calling emergency powers? And there's no context for what those emergency powers are, where they come from. We need to understand how they've been manipulated in the past. And that's what we're getting here in this show. It's great to see so many of you here with us. And I know we have Kat Goida out there running the ideas room. Like I said, we'll be back and we'll be taking your questions next week. And we also have some interviews coming up for you tomorrow and this weekend. So it's going to be great. And of course, some X-Series episodes next Friday. And the show is Friday at 8 p.m. I want to remind you to go to darkjournalist.com, sign up for our free newsletter, keep us in touch through the really remarkable you know, shadow banning and censorship that we've seen going on. So I have so many good examples of this. It's almost funny the way that they do things, but it's also sad because, you know, it shows the level and the, you know, what they will do to control the conversation is even surprising to me. And I know a lot about how these things operate. And, you know, I worked with a tech magazine for over a decade, and you know, that larger picture of how they manipulate the situations is always interesting to me, how they use technology to get there. But we've done the counterattack, and by just putting the information out there and not having a knee-jerk response. You know, a lot of people actually said to me, well, you know, you should get off YouTube because they've done so much censorship. It's not the way it works, because the work that I've put out there, you know, I've always done consistent work because I left the mainstream media because I wanted to do dark journalism, and I did it and was able to do it through YouTube and other platforms too, but really principally YouTube. And so until a company like that makes a move to remove my content, they've removed shows, but you know, my feeling is very, very straight on this, which is that's their move. It's not mine. And I'm going to continue to do what I do. And like I said, if the stuff ever gets banned on that level, look, if I had to, I'd broadcast off my iPhone. That's just the way I do it. So no hangups there. All right. So we'll do about 20 more minutes on this. And it's great to have so many of you here. Okay. Let's get some other things here on the historical record. President Kennedy, he saw it coming. He saw it coming in 1961, in April of 1961, after the Bay of Pigs incident. And he went and addressed the American Newspapers Association, basically the media of the time. And it's quite interesting. Some of you are familiar with this speech, but I'm going to read some key aspects. The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, Kennedy said. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers that are cited to justify it. And so he understood that they were going to use some security emergency to use the COG powers. Even today, back to the Kennedy speech, even today, there's little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there's little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. Right, what's the point? Why keep America if it's not free? There's no point. So the whole idea is freedom and inspiration and independence. Then Kennedy goes a step further and predicts the situation we're in today and the Trudeaus of the world. And he says, and there is a very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That's exactly what we're living through with the COVID bubble. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it is in my control. And I think that's what every one of us needs to say. To the extent that it's within our own control, you know, we're not going to allow it. And if that means, it's amazing, right? Because most of the victories on the lockdown side and on the mandate side have come from concerned parents and mothers attending school meetings and saying, I don't want my kid, you know, rounded up. So it's interesting where the victories come from and the strength and the power of that. And I see that echo in the Kennedy speech to the very same things that we're looking at today. And so finally on that, he says, today, no war has been declared, and however fierce the struggle may be, it may never be declared in the traditional fashion. Our enemies are advancing around the globe. The survival of our friends is in danger, and yet no war has been declared. No borders have been crossed, no marching troops, no missiles have been fired. This is an interesting thing because, again, we're looking at a very similar situation where traditionally in war, you understand who the enemy is. It's who's coming over and taking over your lands and everything else. But the war that we're in is a very insidious war that's run on the establishment side, and it is working through our traditional institutions and the pharma takeover aspect and the financial takeover aspect. And if you challenge the government, your assets get frozen. By the way, all the people who love crypto so much, and I wish, you know, I also am very interested in it, but I wish it were as safe as some of them had hoped it would be. It's pretty interesting because one of the main things that Freeland came forward and said is that they're freezing those wallets, the crypto wallets. And also Biden said, we're going to start to regulate Bitcoin. I mean, how's that going to turn out? So they're on top of it. And if they can freeze what you have, you know, I always say, I go back to Catherine Albrecht, who's a remarkable woman researcher. And I know she had some health issues and she hasn't been very active lately, but she wrote a remarkable book called Spy Chips. And it goes all the way back to 2008. And she had this down in terms of what they were doing. But one of the key things that she said was, you know, I'll tell you what, I lay my $100 down and you lay your $100 down and they are equal in this system. Now, of course, Fed money is debased and all this kind of stuff. I understand that aspect of it, but the actual freedom of spending your money, you know, can you imagine going for your wallet, crypto wallet, and finding out that Christie of Freeland has frozen it because you sent money to a freedom trucker convoy who were, you know, basically working class people that you should be supporting and helping against a tyrannical government. What's wrong with that? And they're saying now that they're going to pinpoint you and make things difficult for you. It was funny because they have more Canadian officials coming out and saying stupid stuff right now. I mean, that whole government, it should be just be cleaned out top to bottom. But they had another minister come out and say, if you've given money to this convoy, watch out, you know, like you're in my sights. So, you know, they're kind of going into this Nero phase where they're, you know, they're losing the ability to even see how crazy they look. And that's a very dangerous bubble to be in. But when you walk around with a lot of these billionaires and stuff like Gates, everybody's just saying, hey, you're great. Don't worry about it. Everything you say is great. The problem is, you know, what I heard is that when he got under fire so much during the whole COVID thing, and he thought he was going to come out and be a hero and like revered as a doctor and all that stuff, even though he's a college dropout. And instead, he was very frustrated by this. And you can even hear it in those interviews where he's like, I don't know why there's so many conspiracies about me. Well, it's because you've been up to some shady stuff on a global level. And you've been living in that world, that bubble, where all those yes men and yes women are there. And when those groups get together and, you know, Bono is high-fiving President Clinton, how much real conversation, how much connection with reality are you in there? I don't know. I think that bubble serves to make these people crazy. And I think that's what we're seeing play out on the Canadian stage. And I think it is the truckers who have forced that situation and is the insane mandates that they were responding to. Now, I think the forces around that, again, are being manipulated to a point to set up some kind of confrontation because, you know, they want the domestic terrorism bill. They want a version of it in Canada. They want it in America, certainly. They want things that will create this idea that, oh, there are these people who believe in freedom that you should be afraid of. And the truth is, you know, in America especially, we've always had very diverse people who think all kinds of different types of ways. And there are always radical groups, whether you go back to the 60s, and you had Black Power groups, you know, you had, I mean, you go all the way back to the 19th century and the KKK. I mean, you're always going to have those groups. The whole idea behind democracies and the Constitution is that, you know, anybody gets the right to free speech. And you hope for the best and you hope for unity and everything else. But nonetheless, you know, you'll have like Farrakhan or something, you know, you're going to have it. And this was part of the incredible hypocrisy, I think, in silencing Alex Jones. And it was basically that we have a long tradition in America of shock jocks, you know, Rush Limbaugh, you know, but it's just something that we have. And the idea that this guy was going to be somebody you were going to target out and deplatform is very interesting because it shows where they're coming from. They don't think that they can compete in the marketplace of ideas with people who are thinking outside the box. And again, it doesn't matter. Like if you think somebody like Jones is a kook or whatever, that's fine. The Constitution defends his right to be a kook. That's just the way it goes. So, you know, that double standard there is starting to collapse. But unfortunately, the double standard exists in that power structure, which controls not just politics, not just Hollywood, but it has this deeper covert control, which comes from the Central Intelligence Agency and the COG faction. And when it comes to aerospace and the UFO file, X-Protect, you know, this is the group that controls these types of matters. And the more that we can expose the COG, the more we can expose the CIA, the more we'll understand how freaks like Trudeau can stand up there and say, I'm not going to tolerate these people. Because you understand the mentality they're coming from. They're being told, you will be the elite of the elite, you know, get these sheep herded in, make sure they're all under these mandates, take total control, and you'll be it. So when that doesn't work out so well, because you actually encounter real human beings, and you don't even have the political chops of Richard Nixon coming down to meet them and talk to them and work it out, even if you're working against them, if you can't even handle that, then, you know, your future in terms of what they want to pull off. Again, I think that they're a very dangerous group, but they're a smaller group. They're smaller than the majority. And if I had to really peg this group. I actually put their numbers at actually 10 to 15% of any kind of popularity that they could get. Everything else, I believe, is kind of stolen or, you know, propagandized. So this is the nature of the thing that we're looking at. Everyone, we've been doing this emergency broadcast. Fantastic to have you all with us here tonight on an off night, a Thursday night, but here we are because the emergency report just could not wait. I could not wait another moment to deal with some of these issues. I wanted to read Professor Scott's piece in here also to give us that real fundamental understanding of what's going on with COG, because Professor Scott, in my opinion, is the gold standard. His book is American Deep State. It's his greatest book. But I think Deep Politics and JFK, Cocaine Politics, these are classics. You know, The Road to 9/11, American War Machine. I mean, you can understand so much about the situation that we're in. And you know, Professor Scott is from Canada. He's a diplomat originally, and then he became a professor out there on the left coast, UC Berkeley. And this is somebody definitely on the left part of the spectrum, but understands it all, showing that the right-left thing, you know, if you believe in fair government and you believe in the Constitution, if you're right or left, it doesn't matter, because, you know, that's all that counts. And I don't care. You know, if somebody were completely on the left and they believed in the Constitution and were pushing it this way, and someone were completely on the right, I would accept them both the same exact way. I consider myself independent largely. These days, so much of the takeover is operating through the DNC, however, that, you know, at least what we're seeing on the Republican side is that they understand that Americans want constitutional law. And this other thing is in league with a foreign power, for sure. So there's a monstrosity growing out of the Democratic Party. And it has elements inside the Republican Party as well. I'm just saying the Republican Party is not joining in with the coup aspect as a group right now. So I'm, you know, the Libertarians, the Republicans right now are looking a hell of a lot better. I think the Democrats need to shake out their entire party and get rid of the CCP elements and others. Well, okay. So we'll read a couple of things here from Professor Scott. Here it is. Now, this is from a lecture that Professor Scott gave on the deep state in 2010. And I'm just going to grab a few key sections. And remember again that the continuity of government program, the one that we're dealing with today, actually grew out of the 80s version, because the original version was to stop, you know, to have an alternate government in the event of a nuclear war. The 80s version was any emergency. So if you find something in the country that you feel, you know, it can be labeled an emergency, you can call COG and have NORTHCOM take over. Now, what's also interesting is in relation to this, Oliver North comes up a few times around this, who's famously the general who was involved in selling arms to Iran illegally in 1987. He comes up in a couple of interesting ways, because 2 years earlier, before he got caught for Iran-Contra, he was running something called Rex 84, which was an exercise for rounding up dissidents in America. So if you held a different view on the war in El Salvador and the Nicaraguan Contras and things like that, if it came to a head, you know, if they felt they were at war, they set up Rex 84 as a way to grab people and hold them in large camps. So Rex 84 is still on the record. You can still get documents related to it. The full scope of the work, the way they developed it under the Reagan administration, this is something that was a project of Bush the First as VP through our friend Oliver North, who was really his puppy dog. And one of the interesting things that North, I think, brought forward was in creating Rex 84, it showed that the government in the 1980s, as they were developing this version of continuity of government, were in kind of exploring the idea of what would we do if we were going to kind of confine large-scale enemies. And the idea was that the anti-war protests of the 70s and 60s had so diminished the ability for the military to get away with things the way that they were under the Johnson administration, that they needed to do something to neuter and eliminate the potential for a large-scale protest movement. These people have taken that 80s idea, and in terms of what they want to do with digital currency, with the Internet of Things, rolling us into this transhumanist future and combining us with technology and making us part of this global control grid, they want to take those very same rules that they were thinking of in the 80s. If we have a movement that's against us, how do we round them all up? What do? We need a name for them. And in this case, you know, they've chosen these names. But they also need the ability. They need a plan to do this. Those plans always fall, just like Rex 84, which was the exercise in the year 84. They fall under emergency planning. It is all in emergency planning. That is the undemocratic sweep that is living there inside the government. So when Trudeau pressed the button and said, I'm calling the Emergencies Act, he did two things. He tried to save himself, and we'll see how it turns out here. But he also exposed the plan, the emergency plan. And they've been getting away with it because they've had the ability to say, oh, it's a medical emergency. That's why we're taking all your freedoms away. But if you just take it away over protests, then you're really showing your cards. That's what they don't like. And that's why you see the press trying to backpedal in the Trudeau thing, saying, hey, this guy, he's really going too far. Even the New York Times, that made me laugh out loud. Okay, Professor Scott, 2010, are you ready? Here we go. From its beginning in 1982, two of the key planners of the secret COG planning committee were Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, the same two men who implemented COG on 9/11. The committee has been established by Reagan under a secret executive order, NSDD 55. This is important. September 14th, 1982. Here's what's interesting. September 14th, 2001 is when we got the September 11th Emergency Act, which every president signs onto now. Despite what Weiner implied, the committee continued to meet without interruption until the George Bush presidency in 2001. There were articles and there were think tank pieces and all this stuff about how COG wasn't necessary anymore. So guess what? It's been dissolved. In the 90s, they tried to get rid of the memory of the COG program, when in fact it continued all the way through. Thus, Cheney and Rumsfeld continued their secret planning during the Clinton presidency, even after both men, both Republicans, were by that time heads of major corporations and not even in government. Andrew Cockburn cites a Pentagon source to support a claim that the Clinton administration had no idea what was going on. That's interesting. Although the exercises continue, still budgeted by over $200 million in the Clinton era, the vanished Soviets were now replaced by terrorists. There were other changes, too. In earlier times, the specialists selected to run the shadow government had been drawn from across the political spectrum. This is interesting. Democrats and Republicans alike. But now, down in the bunker, Rumsfeld found himself in politically congenial company, the player's roster being filled with almost exclusively Republican hawks. Do you see how this works? So anyone can take up the apparatus, because right now we have the DNC running the same exact thing. However, the apparatus was used by Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld, who are all Republicans. So that central force that's operating the whole thing can use either side. COG planning involved different teams of different purposes. It's quite possible the Pentagon official was describing the Department of Defense team dealing with retaliation. It's important to understand that the COG Doomsday Project in the 80s involved more than planning and exercises. It also oversaw Project 908, the construction of a multi-billion-dollar infrastructure for an alternative government. This is crucial. This is what we're living under, this alternative government. Project 908. The key element was an $8 billion communications and logistics program headquartered at Fort Huachuca in Arizona, the headquarters for Army intelligence. So this is a secret network that can't be traced and can't be called in, you know, for court proceedings. There's no way to get these communications. So therefore, they can negotiate anything. Like the takeover and the emergency planning aspect, without any oversight from Congress, for example. This is a crucial factor. One more crucial piece on this, and then we'll move on. There's no way to determine how many constitutional changes since 9/11 can be traced to COG planning. However, we do know that the new COG planning measures were still being introduced in 2007 when President Bush issued National Security Presidential Directive 51. This directive set out what FEMA later called a new vision to ensure the continuity of government. FEMA is a very interesting, shady aspect of this because it has a central function. If you have a flood, you want to send FEMA in and all the rest. But the idea and the popularity of this idea inside government about FEMA camps and how you would set up a Walgreens to, you know, hold people who were dissidents, that all comes out of the FEMA aspect. Okay, all previous annual renewals had enumerated the emergency measures that were being renewed. For example, the measures taken September 14th, 2001, November 16th, 2001, January 16th, 2002. After Bush issued NSPD 51, which is the National Emergency Proclamation, and its new vision and its classified COG annexes, the next renewal of the emergency proclamation replaced the previous specific enumerations with more sweeping general sentences. They stopped talking about what it was. Because the terrorist threat continues, the national emergency declared on September 14, 2001, last extended when he wrote this, September 5, 2006, and the powers and authorities adopted to deal with that emergency must continue in effect beyond September 14th. It's been renewed every year, and we're still under it. So we're under a Constitution suspending emergency edict from September 11th, and there isn't a peep in Congress or the Senate about it. Each side signs on unanimously every year for the NDAA. And I think that gives us some idea of what we're dealing with. Remember, Obama gleefully signed it while he was bombing the heck out of Yemen, and Hillary Clinton was bombing Libya and all the rest of it. It doesn't matter your Republican or Democratic preferences when you get to that level. One congressman explained, this is the final point, one congressman explained to a constituent that the provisions of the National Emergencies Act have now been rendered inoperative by COG. If true, this would indicate that the constitutional system of checks and balances no longer applies, and also that the secret decrees now override public legislation as the law of the land. Think about it. Secret decrees override public legislation as the law of the land. This was all well predicted by Professor Scott a decade ago, and here we are in the middle of it. And now we have just a window into it opening up with Trudeau pressing the button because he's afraid and saying, I'm going to use national powers, emergency powers to do this because he doesn't have the support to do it otherwise. And I mean, his own political system is in revolt against him anyway. But those emergency powers, they wanted to use them here, and I'm sure that they will try. I think that we need to look at the infrastructure side for where they'll do it. Blackouts, cyber attacks, cyber terrorism, and then they'll be able to grab anybody and say, oh, we're under attack. You know, you're a dissident. You know, hey, dark journalist, you've been talking against the government. Guess what? You you have an appointment in Washington, D.C. I mean, this is the way that they want to control the narrative because they don't, they've tried through the media, they've tried to build the popularity, they have not been able to do it. Like I said, step for Biden, 28%, Trudeau, supposedly 30%, probably less than that. Think about it. They don't have the support to do it. They need the emergency powers. Jacinda, you don't have the personality and the ethics to do it. You don't have the popularity. It's not happening. You're going to need emergency powers. That's the thing that they plan to roll out. This is what we're in the middle of. So when we attach the COG understanding involved in it, then we're getting to a much better place, I think, in relation to it. And we must every day, you know, we have to win this one. And I think every day making that effort, communicating with each other. And these are exactly the kind of conversations that we're having here in the ideas room and on this show that they do not want people having, I can guarantee you. From studying all the things that they've been doing to eliminate those conversations. And I think the lockdowns were really indicative of that fact. And with that, I'm going to wrap up the show here tonight. It's been fantastic having you with us. I am going to do some shout outs here. and use the magic button to highlight some comments. And we got Kat Goida running the ideas from out there, doing a great job. I salute you, Kat. Joseph said, Putin is a good man. I can feel it when I watch. Isn't that interesting? You know, Putin has been an enigma. I'll give him credit for this, which is he pushed out GMOs from his country, and he hasn't gone for the woke agenda. You know, he's a practical, reliable person. However, he is a KGB agent, and that is somebody who was also known to eliminate his competition in very, let's say, unethical fashion. I think that Putin's a real mystery, but I don't think that we should have any war with him. And I suggest we have really good relations with the Russians. It seems like that's what they've been trying to have, and we've been messing it up. Unfortunately, particularly the Obama administration. And remember, this goes back. They like the deep state likes the tension with Russia. They want to crush Russia. There's no question about it. And I think that they're really nervous in relation to Russia, because Russia's been doing really well. So I think that a lot of this was drummed up, and they want to sort of create a gigantic reason to consolidate power and to distract from their incredible failures at home. Speaking of the Stepford Biden administration and terrible officials like Secretary of State Blinken, one of the worst Secretary of States I've ever seen on a national stage everywhere. And the Defense Secretary, no prize, Lloyd Austin, trying to enforce mandates on soldiers. You know, I mean, you're already asking them enough to go into dangerous situations. So really just unbelievable. One of the worst, Burns, the CIA director. This is a really, like, it's a Frankenstein administration. And the sooner we're rid of it, the better. But unfortunately, we've got 3 long years with it. And that's the way wars go. let's see. Terry Doherty, Terry B, Doyle Wayne, it's great to see you, sir. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Catherine Harris. Oh, something about nuclear waste there. I'll have to. Brandy Rents, I'm grateful for DJ's commitment to integrity. Thank you. I appreciate it. Roosevelt, please smash that like before you go. Thank you. That's backbenching for us. I really appreciate it. Najat, it's great to see you. A cult fan. Wow. Great crew out there tonight. A lot of familiar faces. And the emergency thing, let's get on it. Let's stay on top of the COG understanding. Let's promote Professor Scott's work on this, because he's got it. And I think he does it really in the academic research fashion, and he doesn't attach a lot of hype to it. And I think this is one of the interesting things about his work. Wally Tango Foxtrot, it's great to see you. Thank you. You are the best. I appreciate that. Thank you. It's great to have you out there. For those of you who gave us super chats tonight, thank you. We appreciate your support as well. Just fantastic. Catherine Harris, oh, Canada, we stand on guard for you. Absolutely. Absolutely. The whole world is watching. And if they pull the global COG, they're going to get more pushback than they know what to do with. And so I highly recommend that they don't. Someone mentioned our friend, Carmen Bolter. Carmen Bolter did pass away last week. And I did confirm that. And I was lucky enough to receive from people who were close to her some details on that. And all I can say about Carmen, I'm going to try to put together some kind of tribute from our interviews with her, because she was a remarkable person. But her work on the Pyramid Code, she was just stellar. Really, there was no match. And she had worked on a 6-episode New Atlantis series. And I'm going to try my best to see what the status of that is, because it's a fitting tribute to all the work that she put forward, and that we all miss a great friend. And she was just one of the best. Absolutely. Fantastic. Catherine. Yes, I agree. Absolutely. Kate's out there. It's great to see you. Ruth A. Yes, it is. I agree. It is sad news. Easy Gamer, fantastic. Sal Lee, Zombie Wolf. Oh, it's a great crew. Great. There's a lot of great conversation I see going on there tonight. Next week, we're going to take your questions and we're going to have a great time with that. I think that, you know, going into COG on the level we did tonight, I wanted to kind of explain what was going on with the emergency aspects. And unless we understand the work around COG and the powers that they can get from the emergency rule, going all the way back, as I said, to the Enabling Act with Hitler, we don't get a real snapshot of what's happening there. And I think putting forward the faces like Freeland and Ardern, you know, Jacinda, to try to, you know, get this monkey, Trudeau is monkeying things up for them. It's too little too late, in my opinion. And they're so desperate, they're looking to run Hillary again. That's pretty bad. On the other side, there's a rapid push growing to completely create a gigantic red wave come November. And, you know, the thing is, the general fundamental, I think, rule of law in America, supporting the Constitution and things like that, the Democrats in power have gone so far away from that, that they're making the Republicans, who have big issues of their own, look a lot better, you know. So that's just the nature of the thing. I would like to see people in government who support the Constitution, left or right, doesn't matter. That's what we're looking for. But, you know, all those things that we're seeing build up on the other side, you know, they're talking about Trump running again and all these things. We're going to see how all that plays out, because Trump, of course, has the liability of the big push and Operation Warp Speed and things like that. So he's going to have to find religion on this matter and stop listening to people like Bill O'Reilly if he wants to get anywhere. But I could see he could have a massive comeback. It's possible. It's real possible. And especially if Biden keeps giving away the store to China. Scarlet Fire, it's great to see you out there. Tweedle, Scott in New York City. Wow. Melissa, terrific. What a great crew out there. We will see you all next week. Actually, we'll see you tomorrow with Fitz interview, and you'll get notifications in your, because we have some subscriber episodes coming up. You'll get notifications in that newsletter. Make sure you go to darkjournalist.com, sign up for the newsletter, and make sure that you stand up and be counted on that. That's the best way that we're going to be able to communicate with each other. And we'll be keeping a close eye on all the things and all the developments. I know it changes daily now in relation to the Canadian part of this story, and New Zealand is starting to heat up as well. So we may be doing some quick, or not so quick, special reports coming up in the future. Mark H, DJ, you're a force of nature. Thank you, Mark. That's great. I couldn't have put it better myself, right? That's hilarious. Thank you. No, I really appreciate it. And, you know, it is through our subscribers and the great supporters out there that we're able to do this phenomenal work. So thank you very much, and have a fantastic Thursday evening. And we'll see you tomorrow with the Fitz interview. Frank Monday, great to see you out there, sir. Ad Astra, indeed. Kat, thank you very much. Carly from Dimensions, it was great to have you. Thank you for showing up. I hope to talk to you soon. And of course, Groovy Bean, Yvonne, terrific to have you out there. Thanks so much for making our night a complete success. And Ivan Langley, love and peace. I agree with you. Thank you, Ivan. We'll see you next. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great night, everyone. And you know, it says end broadcast, but after all, does it ever really end? Think about it. It's an emergency.